This podcast of NPR's On Point with Tom Ashbrook is a production of WBUR Boston.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. E.O. Wilson is as big a biologist as the world has to offer, arguably the planet's most honored scholar of life. He's a towering figure in science. He's been called one of the greatest thinkers of the 20th century. And E.O. Wilson has no time for the intelligent design debate. Believe what you will, he says, but the science of evolution is as clear and firm as any science on Earth. It's just taking a lot of humans a long time to catch up. And yes, the implications are vast for old-time religion. Now E.O. Wilson is writing about Americans and the man whose thinking still rocks their world. Up next on Point, E.O. Wilson on Charles Darwin and the still-burning challenge of evolution. Joining me now in the studio is Edward O. Wilson, professor of biology emeritus at Harvard University. His publications and honors make a list as long as your arm. He's won two Pulitzer Prizes, is famed for his work with ants. He's been called the world's preeminent biologist, one of the greatest thinkers of the 20th century. Now here we are, it's the 21st, and he's editor of the new book, From So Simple a Beginning, the four great books of Charles Darwin. E.O. Wilson, welcome to On Point. Wonderful to have you.
Thank you, Tom. It's a privilege.
I want to get into this intelligent design debate because you speak so clearly on it, but you've got this great new collection, and really, it's hard to understand it without understanding Darwin, the man, and the impact he made, lo, these many years ago now. I wish you'd take us back to a little bit of that. Here you are. You've got these four great books here, The Voyage of the Beagle, On the Origin of Species, The Descent of Man, The Expression of the Emotions in Man and Animals. Take us back to the story of Charles Darwin, the man, and how he came to this incredible breakthrough in his understanding of life on Earth.
1845, Darwin writes one of the great travel classics of all time, and the one I recommend readers to start with if they're not familiar with it, because this is just a great read.
It is indeed. The Voyage of the Beagle. I mean, he's out in the Pampas in Argentina describing the etiquette of gauchos and how you call on the hacienderos. He's an observing machine, this man.
He is describing many of the most remote parts of the world as they were in the 1830s. This is a young man who left England as a naturalist and companion to the captain of a small ship that was to spend 5 years primarily doing a geodetic survey of the coast of South America, but then was to go on around the world.
He also left as a devout young Christian who was considering being a preacher as a calling.
That's right. He was trained at Cambridge for the ministry and quoted the Bible by his own testimony and his autobiography to his shipmates on the way out to settle all moral arguments. But then he gradually lost it. He didn't lose his basic beliefs, his Anglican beliefs, because he had come upon evolution. I think it was the other way around. He had pretty well dropped his religious beliefs, as he said, because of the doctrine, primarily the doctrine of damnation. And then
that is believe or eternal hell for you
for a trillion years, and then that's just the beginning. Any rate, he I think my interpretation is that this freed him to explore widely in what was in those days to be considered heretical avenues of thought.
You say those days, though sometimes it seems like it's still heretical.
Oh yes,
today.
Indeed. Well, just to finish our tour, our super brief tour, he launches. He gets the idea of evolution. We know a lot about how he came upon those initial ideas, and for a long period of time, he gathers information to support the theory of natural selection, which he developed quite early. Publishes that in 1859, and that's the bombshell. I think the evidence is extremely strong today that life, including human life, originated autonomously. We see now how this is possible and probably even inevitable. But the approach I've taken in a book that I've just put to press, which I think the title says a lot, is The Creation.
This is a forthcoming book that you've
got. It's a forthcoming book, be out next year. The Creation, Letter to a Southern Baptist pastor. I was raised a Southern Baptist.
Alabama.
Mm-hmm. And so I look for these areas of bridging. And my approach is to say, can we put aside, at least for a while, these fundamental differences and see if we can find a common ground in which scientist, and environmentalist, secularist, can work with the religious to achieve something really good. And the area that I've picked out, I've argued it in the past, but now I'm arguing it in book-length form, mm-hmm. is saving the creation. And I use that word without any tinge of irony to denote the diversity of life on Earth, which is disappearing rapidly, and we're just becoming aware of the magnitude of that, and it's of concern to the religious of all faith. It should be losing the creation, destroying it, and certainly of concern to the scientists who understand the consequences of losing it. And I think that science and religion together are the two most powerful forces in the world. If they could work together, that is, the religious out of their worldview and the scientist out of their understanding of where it all came from, then they could actually accomplish a great deal. And once that kind of bridge is built, then perhaps we'll gradually, should I use the word, evolve some kind of rapprochement. But the worldviews, I don't think, will ever be dissolved one into or annealed one into the other.
So you're saying don't fight and bicker and rage while the house burns down, while the planet goes to hell in a handbasket.
That's a good way of putting it, Tom.
but you are at the same time leaving on the table this fundamental challenge to the belief system, if not the moral code, but the belief system of, choose your religion, but certainly Christianity, because you're saying you've got to take the active creator out of it. And man is not made in the image of anybody. Humans evolved by evolution. They did not evolve by design.
That's the likely conclusion, I think, from the scientific evidence. But let me add at once that this hasn't come about by scientists as a whole forming some kind of a conspiracy or ideological position against
it. To secularize humanity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Quite the contrary. To believe that would be to misunderstand the culture of science. Science is based upon discovery. Discovery is the currency of the silver and the gold. You become a scientist when you're able to make discoveries. You become a great scientist when you make great discoveries. If there were the slightest possibility in the way even of a working theory of transcribing divine force into organic reality, you can be sure that there would be a stampede of scientists to
because
get in
there's
on
the
that
Templeton
discovery.
Prize, there's the Nobel Prize, there's wealth and glory.
There is history made and eternal fame in science. There's nothing more than real scientists, nothing more intriguing or appealing to real scientists than that, but it just isn't there.
So, but what I want to get at, and I see what you're saying, the planet has to be saved. The creation is also an ultimate value in religion and in science. Yet you're asking religion to undergo a kind of a reformation, a transformation. You're asking believers, you're saying, if you ultimately, well, maybe you're not. But
no, I'm not.
To come over to your side of the bridge, they would have to cut loose from very fundamental beliefs about the origin of humans, the purpose, the notion of purpose in humanity.
Well, actually, I'm asking for action on the common ground that is entirely consistent with both of the very different worldviews. It was, you know, the Prussians come to Waterloo.
Yes, yes. because they
save,
have to.
To save the day. And the idea here is that there are universal values that we can agree on very quickly we then sort out the differences in how to live with them and watch science continue to grow and watch religions continue to evolve.
But isn't science ultimately a rebuke, rebuttal, a disproof in this formula to the religion that you want to cooperate with here?
to the present time, yes. If scientists could find some way of discovering, if there were the slightest hint of positive evidence or even a reasonable mm-hmm. explanation for intelligent design, they'd be on it, as we like to say in the South, like a chicken on a June bug. I mean, we're waiting to see this. But the fact is that intelligent design today, the evidence or the argument for it is a default argument, followed
can't
by...
Can't figure it out, therefore...
Yeah, we haven't figured it out. The proponents of it say, gee, there are some mysteries left, you know, like the origin of the eye or the... Mm-hmm. rotary motor mm-hmm. of the bacterium psyllium that haven't been figured out. And we say, we think it's going to be impossible. Mm-hmm. And if it's impossible, then there must be something supernatural guiding it. Well, scientists are in the business of cracking such complex systems. They're doing it faster and faster. And the default argument can be eliminated pretty quickly, but a default argument can never prove anything. It just says we don't know yet.
We've just got a minute and a half. So when you look back at the beginning of the beginning of the beginning, you just see a scientific challenge to be resolved.
I look at it this way. I should identify myself. I think it's good and healthy for people to put their beliefs mm-hmm. on the table, maybe oversimplifying with a term, but I am not an atheist. I don't claim that there is no God. I don't know. I am not an agnostic. I don't claim that it is unknowable. So what I am is something of a provisional deist, but I consider the origin of the universe and the setting of physical laws, which ultimately led to life on this planet, more a problem I hand to the astrophysicist.
And there you have it.
And if they can't solve it, why then the ID people will have a base to work from.
Big challenges and tremendous insight. E.O. Wilson, it's great to talk to you. We're so grateful for being here. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.